We're going to be talking about sex.
We're going to be talking about sex, yeah.
Which is disgusting. It's disgusting and vile. Anybody who has sex needs to have the blood
of Jesus. If you're a Christian, you probably should abandon this page right now, because we're going to talk about things in reality that you're not allowed to hear about. You might want to think about leaving right now, because, I mean, we're about to talk about things like, you know, natural bodily functions and human biology and anthropology and the way the world works and stuff like that. And that is probably not something that you really should learn about. What'd you think of that last phone call?
I mean, I'm not familiar with those guys, so I wasn't able to discern how much that guy was lying or bullshitting you. It sounded like, you know, he got on the phone with you and then wussed out and tried to act all polite. I mean, plus it was hard to judge anyway because he's British, so, like, he sounds smart.
That's funny. Kelly always
says that.
Sitting
there listening like, oh, this guy sounds nice. Oh, wait, he's probably dumb. He's just British.
Right.
Why is it that the British accent just makes you sound nice and intelligent? Like, you could say anything. They could be telling you to go fuck yourself, and they still sound nice and intelligent.
It's a whole complex of stuff. It has to do with the way we conceptualize intelligence in this country. It makes you sound smarter, but it also makes you sound, in the views of most people in this country, weaker or less crazy or less, you know, it's a whole positive stuff and negative stuff stereotype about intelligence that we have here.
They might also think that you're pretentious.
Kelly and I have talked about how...
Yeah, exactly. And pretentious, by the way, is one of my, like, top 10, you know, commonly misused words. You know, people always call me, or call lots of people, pretentious about stuff. And it's like, oh, you read Shakespeare. It's like, well, yeah, I like it. I'm not pretending to like it. I really do. You know, if I'm pretentious, what am I pretending?
Kelly and I have talked about how it seems like all of the infomercials always have that British person on there to sound like really smart and make you really like kind of trust and fall in line with
yeah,
whatever they're
that's
saying.
The positive side. But then the negative side is, you know, like the bad guy in the action movie is always has like the European accent, you know, because he's not a regular guy like the tough guy American hero of the action movie. Actually, I had a thing about intelligence based on what you guys were talking about before with Mensa.
Uh-huh.
And I think we started talking about this a little bit last time, that the idea of the hyper-intellectual who can't have fun.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that over the last, you know, 15 minutes or so, and it's like, here's the thing, here's the way I see it. Those smart people, or the people who act real smart and, like, can't have fun or do wacky stuff, those are the people who are, like, a little bit smart. Like, they're smart. They're definitely smarter than, you know, the average person, but they're not, like... They're not smart enough that they don't need to be insecure about it. Because, me and all my friends who are, like, really, really smart, you know, we love Jackass and Beavis and Butthead and whatever. Like, we're not insecure about not looking smart because we know we're smart.
Right.
But it's those people who are, like, you know, almost, like, just barely geniuses. Those are the people who are like, oh, I only play chess. I don't watch TV. You know, it's actually, you know what it is? It's the same thing as just conceptualize intelligence as a substance and compare it to, like, money and who's, like, a Republican because of money in this country. It's the people who are, like, a little bit rich, the people who have, like, $1 million or $2 million. Those are the people who are like, oh, money, 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 like, you can't tax me. You know, someone who's got, like, shitloads of money, like, you know, Bill Gates, George Soros, he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the people who are like just barely, you know, can say that they're rich compared to other people that, you know, guard it so closely. And it's the same thing with, you know, those are the kind of smart people you're talking about. They're the people who are like just barely smart.
That's an interesting analogy. I never really thought of that.
I got a million of them.
Just real quick. I want to get some business out of the way. First of all, I want to remind our audience that our show sponsor is EvolveFish.com. EvolveFish.com, of course, is the home of the Evolve Fish, a rational response to the Jesus Fish. But I also wanted to point out today that there is a little blog campaign that we helped distribute earlier today, which, of course, gives us more publicity from the religious right. Rod Parsley, a televangelist, has talked about us several times on his show. He talks in very spooky language. He says things like, we need to plead the blood of Jesus on our children so that they can be protected from groups like the Rational Response Squad.
And
it turns out that there is an actual group now called Radical Response. Everybody just copies off of us. In fact, there's a thread right now on our message board about RRS being trendsetters and how we came out with the blasphemy challenge. And since then, There's a list of about 25 challenges that have been issued on YouTube after our success of our blasphemy challenge, and yet none of them have been even remotely as successful, including the fact that most of the Christian challenges don't have a single response. But I think it's kind of funny that, you know, there's constantly these response groups to us, and it seems to always be like eight people kind of tapping each other on the back. And they're going to have this party in Bloomsburg, PA, where they all get together for God and they raise money. And they really effectively do absolutely nothing to slow us down. They just create fundraising drives and fundraising efforts to lie to their community, to give them the idea that they're actually accomplishing something, when in reality they never write to us, they never challenge us, they never offer any arguments to our arguments. And you have groups like the Righteous Responders, who, you know, I was speaking to a guy related to them earlier, and some of these people are in our chat room right now, and they effectively do absolutely nothing but brainwash more children into thinking that they're doing something. And they've never once confronted us properly.
How could they? I mean, all those people would know how to do is say stuff that makes people who already agree with them applaud. Like, there's no such thing as... It's not just that they don't have arguments to support what they could say. They don't know what an argument is. Like, that whole way of thinking just doesn't work for them. It's like regular people trying to think about, like, well... Okay, I hear that there's a fourth dimension, and the fourth dimension is time, but I don't understand what that means. I can't picture it. That's what just like a simple argument seems like to those people.
Right.
Yeah. You know, essentially, like, all they do is reiterate the beliefs that they already hold and then say, well, you haven't answered my argument. It's like, well, you never made an argument. You just told me what you believe. And yeah, okay, that's what you believe. Whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's actually an argument for anything objectively realistic.
Well, because their whole thing is, and I figured this out, not just about religious people, but about kind of right-wing people in general, even the ones who are, you know, talk about secular stuff a lot of the time, is, you know, we're used to thinking of, okay, an argument is made up of ethos, logos, and pathos. And all they're worried about is ethos, just about how they come off looking. So really, when you or me or, you know, anyone like us is in an argument with one of those guys, they're not thinking about saying stuff that would make sense to us or coming up with arguments. Their goal is always the same thing. Their goal is to, like, trick us into getting mad and yelling at them so we end up looking mean and they end up looking nice. Like, get us so pissed off that we just, like, start going off on them, and then they fall back on this, like, oh, I'm allowed to believe whatever I want.
Yeah,
you're being mean to me.
They are.
Yeah, but they think that accomplishes something, but it doesn't really.
We took a lot of criticism after the Nightline debate for that reason, because Kirk and Ray come off as being so nice and polite and friendly, but they're really being very rude in a nice, polite, and friendly voice. Like, why don't you go fuck yourself? Does that really sound nicer? But when you're faced with that kind of idiocy and nothing you say gets through to them, it is frustrating and you do get mad sometimes, especially when, for us, this is what we deal with on a daily basis. And eventually it's just like, seriously, like, I've listened to recordings of myself where you can audibly hear my head explode.
Yeah.
And it just happens. But that doesn't make my argument any less valid. It doesn't make their argument any more valid.
You know, I wish I could agree with your optimism that that tactic is not accomplishing anything, and it might not have once, but here's the way I see stuff now. That whole, like, you know, don't worry about the content of your speech, just worry about looking nice thing is more and more effective with people, at least in this country, the younger those people are. Like, the people who are around, like, you know, 10 or so years younger than us, the generations who are, like, in college now, coming out of college now, they respond to things way more in that way. Just look at, like, oh, you know, who's, like, getting mad and who's not getting mad and who's, like, being mean and who's not being mean. Even if it should be this totally transparent, someone just pretending to be nice because, like, they suck and obviously they're, you know, a dick in real life. And the ironic thing about that is, and this is kind of leading into the whole thing with 1585, which for those who just joined us is my website, the1585.com.
Let's give a proper introduction to Sexo. It's Sexo Grammaticus, and his website is the1585.com, 1585.com. It's the1585.com. And if you check out his website, you'll find out that he, in a way, is basically us in just a different sort of design and layout, but if you check out the code of 1585, yep. you'll find that he is very, very, very similar to us. And in fact, that's one of the things we want to do
yeah,
later
we're
today is compare the similarities.
But yeah, what just started to come up then is kind of what 1585's angle is. We talk a lot about or notice stuff that ends up helping the political right, that it's actually like thought up or sort of the fault of the left. Because if you think back to like the whole, you know, 90s MPC and stuff, it was the left's idea to do this whole, you know, just listen to people who are being nice thing. And there are a lot of people coming up now who were raised in liberal communities or liberal areas of the country, and as a result of the type of liberalism they were exposed to, right-wing religious stuff ends up sounding better and more credible to those people, because they just look at these guys and they're like, oh, they're being so polite, and they don't know how, you know, the idea of like figuring out what's true and what's false is not what's in their heads, because they were told, oh, well, nothing is true and false. Everything that everyone believes is okay, which is what's so annoying about the political scene to me now, is that basically it's a fumble by the left that was recovered and run back by the right. The left spent 20 years going, there's no such thing as objective truth. Everyone's opinion is equally valid. You can believe whatever you want. You can believe whatever you want. And then all the crazy people in the middle of the country went, oh, we can believe whatever we want. Okay, we will. Thanks. You know, and yeah. here we are.
I just wanted to comment real quick on the person that I was speaking to before we talked to you, Red Sky. He says, my children are not brainwashed. God wants you to get a life. I just wanted to point out that if the story of the Bible is accurate, God, of course, would be an infinite being. And, of course, anybody who has any sort of basic childish understanding of logic would understand that infinity can't have once. It is impossible. It is not something that anybody with any sort of intelligence would ever say. An infinite being just is. He is everything all at once. He is all needs, all wants, all desires, all non-desires, everything all-encompassing, that it is impossible for God to want anything at all if, in fact, he is infinite and the creator of the universe. So as we see these really, really poor arguments throughout the show, I'll spend the 2 seconds that it takes to debunk them. And apologies for interrupting. But I do want to entertain the chat room while we're talking. Yeah. So sorry.
Well, it's not even stuff like that. It's not even about God now. Like, these people, according to their internal logic, what they should think is, okay, well, if God knows everything and is infinitely intelligent or whatever, then that means God is, you know, infinitely logical and wants us to use our reason. But, you know, because there were people who did believe in God, you know, during the Enlightenment or whatever, who looked at it that way. And a lot of the stuff we're doing now, we actually owe to that tradition. But the people who are the religious people now, it's like they just want there to be this thing they can do to piss off smart people. It's like the point of God in our culture now is pissing off smart people for the sake of pissing off smart people because you're jealous of them.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, all of the religious stuff now is all of this, like, you know, it's a mystery. You're not supposed to think, you know, reason has absolutely nothing to do with it. And there were a lot of religious traditions at one point in time in the West where, you know, reason was supposed to have a lot to do with it. And it's gotten worse.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment, like, we went back when we were talking about the whole concept of political correctness and how
yeah.
it has essentially turned everybody into a bunch of pussies who don't want to actually utilize logic, science, and factual data to say to somebody, you are wrong. Because
yeah.
then you might hurt their feelings, and then they
yeah.
would cry, and then you'd be the big bad meanie, and nobody would believe you. And,
yeah.
yeah.
Or, you know, I guess the way their logic goes is, you know, well, if somebody annoys you and then you prove them wrong, that's the worst thing you can do, because that's going to damage their self-esteem, and then they'll become, you know, even meaner or something.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work. Most assholes, their self-esteem isn't too low. Their self-esteem is too high. You know, like, that's not the problem.
Yeah.
The mistake the left made recently was assuming that human nature is good. And, like, there's no one who's just nuts, or there's no one who's just a dick. It's all, like, society, and if we just, like, went about the self-esteem stuff in the right way, then, like, the problems would just kind of magically go away. And that drove people, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about, like, you know, science versus religion, okay, but, like, there are now these people who see themselves as being, like, you know, to the left of science, who like come at science from the left, which is just nuts. I mean, there are, you know, some situations where ironically science and religion agree and, you know, PC is the thing that disagrees. Like with, yeah. I don't know, if you're having a conversation about like gender,
yeah,
you know,
well,
like are like gender difference. Science says there's gender difference, and so does religion, for very different reasons, obviously. But then you've got this whole sea of other people whose answer is, like, neither science nor religion. And it's like, well, huh? Well, I mean, technically, what yeah. they do is a religion, too. They just don't realize it. But.
Yeah, that's actually the point I was going to bring up about the recent studies on structural brain differences between males and females. This was actually, I believe, yeah.
On average,
meta
of course,
study.
Because any individual...
Yeah, but in like as a generalization, that men tend to have certain parts of their brain that deal with like spatial relations and things like that are larger than in women's and things like this. And this is just a study that just shows that these differences exist. It doesn't imply anything. But then you have people like Gloria Steinem who came out and outright said, oh, no, that's bullshit. It's like, well, here's the data right in front of you. So,
yeah.
I mean, what's the problem? You know, it would be like saying, well, men have a penis and women have a vagina. And no, that's bullshit. There's no difference. We're absolutely the same. I mean,
yeah.
it's
of course,
ludicrous.
If it had been a study that said, like, oh, the part of the brain that makes you a violent, obnoxious asshole is bigger in men, then that would have been fine.
Yeah, she would have been all in support of that one.
Yeah. You know, if somebody presents you with scientific data and you cover your eyes and ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, then what you're doing is a religion. And, you know, it's just sad. And since you brought up Steinem, my main beef with her and with the kind of feminism she represents is that, okay, she hates Freud. You know, and I get it. Okay, fine. He said the penis envy thing, it was you know, incorrect. I mean, if you look at it as a metaphor and call it, you know, metaphoric, phallus envy or whatever, then it's the same thing feminism says and there's no problem. But basically they've caused this whole generation of young thinkers now to like dismiss all of Freud for yeah. this like one paragraph when the guy wrote like 99% of the guy's stuff is awesome. And liberals should love Freud. Freud did more to create the modern left. Like, you know, the idea of like, oh, this person is such and such a way because they were beaten as a kid or whatever, which is like what liberals say now. Who do you think thought of that shit? Freud.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as far as the left being ideally contra religion, Freud probably stuck more nails in the coffin of religion than any individual who's ever lived. You know, every liberal should love Freud and like... liberals hate Freud. It's totally backwards.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't particularly agree with all of Freud's ideas, like the Oedipus and Electra complex and things like that.
Oh, no, he was wrong about some stuff. But you know, so was Newton. No yeah. scientist was right about everything.
But he pioneered an entirely new method of dealing with people and their neuroses or psychoses, and all of his work should not be dismissed just because of that one thing. We have taken his work and we need to refine it and build on it. And, you know, it's like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, well, the same way you do with any science.
Yes. So, yeah, we agree on that. See, it's another
cool.
thing. We just add to the list of things that we agree about.
Speaking of that list, do you think we should go through a little bit of the code of 1585?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to do right now.
Let me explain, ready to segue. Yeah, let me explain a little bit about what we've got going on here. If you guys go to our website, on the left-hand side, you'll see something called Hama Rookie's Irrational Precepts. And we just kind of came up with a list originally that we didn't really expand much on. And Sexo on his website has something very similar, except he goes much more in depth, and it's a really funny sort of core document, but it's much like ours. In fact, I guess probably the biggest thing is the pro-sex. We don't have anything about sex on ours.
Yeah, well, ours is more like we take the stance of things we want to eradicate.
Yes,
they
and his
take
is
the
more
stance
pro,
of, yeah.
Right, exactly, which is really cool, and it's good that we can work together like that, too, because a lot of people say, you know, well, you guys always say, what are you against, but what are you for?
Which is another problem with the left now. People on the left are afraid to be like, I'm for such and such a thing. I think it's true. You know, I can say what I disagree with,
right.
but I'm afraid to say what I think is true.
Right. I look at it more like, and to use a sexual example, because the show is going to have something about sex, maybe awesome. Having threesomes is something that is right for you, but having never having threesomes is something that is right for me. And these are, you know, subjective opinions that we both create and decide on our own what our personal preferences are. And so I think that it's very hard sometimes to make a sort of blanket pro stance for something, although you do it very, very well. And that was the reason I originally, you know, wanted to kind of take sort of the anti-stance, because it's a lot easier for me to say, hey, look, that's ridiculous. I know you're not supposed to believe in that, you know, and what should you believe in instead? Well, I'm not sure. You know, you view the world and look at how the world operates and try to make a very good and rational decision about how you want to operate. But to some degree, the Code of 1585, you know, on your site is exactly what we would have put out had we put out.
Well, you just used the words good and rational as synonyms. That's being pro something.
No, and obviously, yeah.
Rationality.
Oh, yeah, we're very pro a lot of things, but I just think it's a lot harder to say that. You know, I've had a bunch of conversations where people are like, well, what are you for? And it's really hard to say, like, you know, to give a list that just can spout off the top of your head, well, I'm for this and I'm for that, because I recognize that some of the things that I'm for that I can come to a rational and wise decision about in a different lifestyle is not something that somebody else would be for.
But you know what the problem is, I think, for a lot of people in our position is that the things that we're for are so obvious to us that we don't even think of them as being things. So it's like, oh, like I can't think of, like, you know, strong beliefs that I have, you know, the way these wacky people do. But it's because ours are, like, so obvious that we're like, well, that's not a thing. That's just being normal.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you have to kind of, like, backtrack and be like, well, how would other people see me?
Right.
And, you know, look at yourself from their perspective. And then you realize, oh, wait, this thing that just seems like, you know, just the air or just normal to me actually is a thing.
Right.
And, you know, here's how I would explain it.
Right. Once again, if you guys just tuned in, this is Brian Stapert from the Rational Response Squad, hanging out with Kelly and Rook. And on the phone with us right now is Sexogrammaticus from the1585.com. He now has a special section on our website on the left-hand side. You can check it out. It says Rational Authors or RRS Authors. And there's a bunch of featured people that are members of our community there. And, of course, don't forget, EvolveFish.com is our show sponsor, our rational response to the Jesus Fish. But, Kelly, why don't you bust out the way that you want
all
to
right
here? Yeah, this code of 1585.
I'm going to bust right out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, don't bust out too much because they might ban us from Stickham.
They might ban us from Stickham. All right. So, the code of 1585, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to at least touch on the main topics. So, 1585s. Which I'm assuming the members of 1585 are utterly free of supernatural beliefs. Well, I mean, that first one right there was enough to, like, pretty much get me on your team.
Cool.
So what kind of supernatural beliefs are you really utterly free of? Like, do you consider yourself to be, like, a strong atheist, like, you know that none of that exists, or like an agnostic atheist, like maybe it could, but there's
no
reason to believe it, or
I'm an atheist.
Yes.
I am, as far as, you know, this is the situation where you usually have to get into a debate about what the word no means.
Yeah.
K-N-O-W. But I mean, I am as sure that there's no God as I am of anything. You know, I mean, yes, you can do the philosophy class, oh, how do you know you're not dreaming right now stuff. But aside from that, yeah.
But you would say,
and,
like,
you know,
kind of like
and
us.
The same, you know, I mean, I as far as people who are being, you know, oh, well, everyone, that sort of, oh, everyone should be an agnostic because you can't really be sure. It's like, well, I mean, do I have to be an agnostic about, like, whether tarot cards work?
Right.
You know? Like, I mean, it's just another one of those things. You know, do I have to be an agnostic about whether, like, you know, a dream catcher really catches your dreams?
Yeah.
Like, no, I can say, like, I definitely don't believe in those things. So, you know, what's the difference?
I think the most important thing for a Christian to hear when they hear that sort of thing is, and I already know the answer to this because I know that you're an intelligent guy, but just for clarification for those that don't get it, if somebody presented to you evidence for a God or evidence to prove that tarot card reading actually is a real science that works, would you accept it?
Well, of course, if someone presented me with evidence of anything,
right,
I would accept it. That's the difference between me and
them.
Well, religious people on the right and Gloria Steinem on the left. That's actually one thing, because this is, you know, remember, you have to think about what other people don't know about you. And this is something I think religious people don't get about us, is that if somebody presented me with evidence that God existed, I would be overjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. Right.
Yeah, like,
I would
I'm
love
immortal.
It if there were a God and if there were a heaven and if I could believe that like evil people were going to be punished forever in hell and that like good people were going to go to heaven.
Right.
That would be awesome.
Right.
You know, yeah. I it's not that I don't want that to be the case. It's just that I don't believe it is the case.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a difference. So many people are so used to arguing just what they want to believe that they assume that everyone else is arguing what they want to believe.
I think
and that's why people say, oh, atheists hate God. It's like, no, if there were a God, I would love it. But yeah. I don't think there is one.
I think we'd all have to understand, too, that obviously any God that could potentially exist, and by God, let's call it something that created existence back as far, you know, we roughly understand the Big Bang. So, you know, God created the Big Bang. And the point that I think that people should realize that if there is a God at all, I can guarantee you, in fact, I will bet you my life that it's not the God of the Bible. The God that would exist would be some sort of God that is not all-loving and is not perfect and is not all-knowing. It would be more of sort of an incompetent sort of figure that somehow managed to create the universe but didn't manage to give us a perfect existence down here. So
yeah, and you bring up an important distinction there, which is like the idea of like, oh, a God at all. You know, these religious guys will, you know, get into it with you about like, oh, there must be a God. Because, you know, like Ray Comfort with his stupid, like, oh, there must be a painter crap. Like, yeah. You know, even if just to mess with him, you said, okay, hypothetically, suppose that convinced me. Suppose I was like, oh, wow, you're right. The universe must have been created. That still wouldn't mean that whatever God it is that exists is your God, you know, who thinks all, you know, just like there must be a divine being at all, they'll take any evidence for that and then go straight to you're not supposed to have sex and like you're not supposed to curse and like, okay, even if you could prove there were a God, are you saying you could also prove that like God doesn't want me to curse or have sex? I mean, isn't that just as big a leap from that previous given as the previous given was from whatever was before that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
You
they
know,
don't...
they don't mean a God. They mean their God.
Yeah, they
the
don't...
one that they made up in their head. That specific one, not just like a generic creator.
Well, that's also interesting,
you know,
too.
It's about them. They believe that their God, that's what it is.
None of them believe in the same God. So I always found that interesting that you could ask 10 Christians who all go to the same church 25 questions about their God, and you'll find out that none of them have the same exact idea of God, and that God does exist, and the only place that he exists is solely in the mind of deluded people who believe in him, and that's it.
And as far as people who disagree about what God thinks, how about, you know, different popes who disagree about stuff, right? If Catholics believe God tells the Pope what to say, then how come, you know, one Pope says a different thing from the previous Pope? Shouldn't they all say the exact same thing? And for that matter, if God speaks through the Pope, then why do you need to elect a righteous cardinal? Couldn't you just make a homeless guy the pope and God would just tell him what to say? Couldn't you just pick the pope at random off the street if it's really God talking?
Well, it has to be like a special person, you know.
It has to be a person who's gonna who we know is gonna say what we want him to say.
Yeah,
even exactly. Though it's actually God talking, of course.
Somebody who's been thoroughly indoctrinated into our belief system. Yeah, they don't understand their own logical non sequiturs because obviously, even if you could prove that evolution was a complete hoax and a lie, even if you could prove that there was a creator, you couldn't prove that it was Yahweh. But they think that they can, you know, these like the Ray Comfort guys, you know, they all think that just proving that it couldn't have happened on its own means that their God is real. And it's just like, okay, people, listen, like look at your own argument and tell me if you really think that makes sense. But they're incapable of rationally analyzing it because their brains are so fully compartmentalized.
That's how you go at them, is point out all the ways that religious person A disagrees with religious person B. Because, you know, when they're arguing against us, they'll all get together and just say, oh, a God, you know, generic religious explanation. But really, like, we're not even the main people they hate. The main people they hate are each other. They just want to get us out of the way so they can kill each other. If there's an atheist in the room, the fundamentalist Protestants and like Catholics and whoever else will all get together and just go, oh, generic God, and gang up on the atheist. And then secretly, the fundamentalist Protestants believe that the Catholics are going to hell and the Catholics believe that whatever, you know?
Yeah, Catholics aren't real Christians and Protestants aren't real Christians. And yeah, the whole no true Scotsman, none of them are real Christians. That's the fact right there, is that none of them are.
Just keep pointing out that stuff, because religious people all put together are a majority, but any one individual sect isn't.
The argument that kills me, I've actually threatened to tape a knife to my microphone, and the next time that somebody tried to use it against me, I was just going to immediately stab myself in the throat.
The knife of phone.
The knife of phone is Pascal's wager. But the best response to that is, yeah, okay, you're right. But Allah is the real God. You know, so you're still going to go to hell. You're losing.
Well, actually, that gets into Pascal's wager was disproved in the early 90s by Homer Simpson. Remember the episode where Homer decides he doesn't want to go to church anymore and says, like, well, what if we pick the wrong religion, Marge? Then every week we're just making God madder and madder. That disproves Pascal's wager, that it's pragmatically in your interests to be religious even if there's no God.
Awesome.
Maybe it's like the SATs, where like, you know, leaving it blank is better than guessing and guessing wrong.
Yeah, that's Homer true.
Simpson, you know, if you leave it blank, its score stays the same. Guess wrong, it's points off. Plus, there's also, you know, my own argument against Pascal's wager, which is, logically, if I live a good life and do the right thing, and then it turns out that I'm wrong and there is a God, wouldn't God be even more impressed that I did the right thing anyway, even though I wasn't expecting a reward? Wouldn't God be even more impressed with that than with a religious person who is just doing the right thing to get into heaven?
No, because God's a megalomaniacal maniac.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's crazy. But yeah.
Oh, I forgot, because the most important thing to God is that you
worship him.
You know, worship him rather than that you treat other people well, of course.
He just wants you to kneel down before him, you know. Typical man. So anyway, on to the next point. 1585s are pro-sex.
Did you just make that up yourself? That was hilarious.
What? What?
The just wants you to kneel down before him, typical man thing.
I did. I just, right off the top of my head.
Earlier,
it's hilarious. I didn't notice it was a double entendre at first, but then
I'm a big fan of double entendre.
Earlier today,
that should be on T-shirts or something.
Earlier today, I heard somebody say that Jesus just wants you to come on to him on your knees. I don't know.
Come to him on your knees.
That's yeah.
Awesome.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they meant that he was supposed to suck him off, or if you were supposed to be coming by the time he got on your knees, or if they just meant something different. But
coming was,
well, there was actually a lot of in the Middle Ages and later up to the Renaissance, a lot of like erotic poetry about Jesus, where, you know, poetry where like Jesus is androgynous and like has tits, and but like love comes out of his tits, and like very kind of, you know, poems about prayer and whatever, but were really, you know, kind of sexy.
Well, I wish
so
this came out of my tits.
That's actually something, that's not a joke we're making. That used to be part of the whole mentality, and it's one of the sort of cool aspects of it that all those people forgot about.
Well, it reminds me of, you know, the whole secret gospel
that's
of Mark.
I was just going to talk about the mystery cults and stuff.
Although I don't buy into all of it, but I mean, there is a scene in Mark where a boy runs away naked from Jesus when he's captured, you know, throwing off his mantle, and you know, it's very symbolic of the same sort of free sort of sexuality that was extant during the time period, you know?
Yeah. But okay, so yeah, you guys are pro-sex. Well, I'm pro-sex too. And I think everybody here at the Rational Response Squad is pro-sex. And
you know, sometimes the people in your chat room aren't, but yeah.
Well, I mean, we're not talking about those people. But obviously, anybody who's not pro-sex has either not had it or not had good sex. So, we can just, you know, disregard those people.
Yeah.
But so...
Well, people are also insecure and think that, like, when good stuff happens to them, it doesn't count. You know, a lot of those people probably have had decent sex, but they're just thinking, oh, it's, you know, not as good as, like, when other people out there have sex. That must be better. You know, when they have sex, it counts. It's normal. That's the way the world works for them. And when I happen to have sex, it's, you know, I just got lucky, or it's an accident or whatever. You know, people conceptualize themselves as being down and out and the loser. And like when something good happens to you, it's the exception. And when something good happens to someone else, it's the rule. And that's what makes people jealous. And that's what makes people nuts.
Wow. Well, I mean, I never really thought about it like that, because I personally don't care how anybody else experiences their own sex, as long as like the sex that I'm experiencing feels good to me. So that's good sex, yeah. You know.
Well, you're enlightened.
I'm enlightened. Oh, I've never been. I don't think I've ever had that title bestowed upon me before. Thank you so much.
Oh, sure.
But I did enlighten you last night, though. It was good, too, right?
Yeah.
For like about a half an hour.
So that's why my computer isn't working.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so why do you feel the need to come out and have your position on sex? Like, why is that, first of all, number two on your list? And why do you feel the need to clarify that?
Well, it's part of what I was saying before about, you know, certain things may seem obvious to oneself, but you have to put yourself outside of yourself. Because, first of all, it's something that a lot of religious people are against. I think the cause and effect there is backwards, by the way. I don't think that a lot of people are necessarily end up being against sex because they're religious. I think they're probably insecure about sex in the first place and then become religious for that reason. So we've got the cause and effect backwards, maybe, for a lot of those people. But it's also something, since the website does also criticize PC and certain aspects of the left, although overall I identify myself as a liberal, because, you know, a lot of the left is against it too. And that kind of like, oh, you know, commercials shouldn't be sexy and there shouldn't be porn and everyone's supposed to be mad at, you know, models or whatever. So it's one of those things that, like, people on both sides are mad about. So I wanted to clarify that. And also, just because the site has a lot to do with, like, redeeming the idea of being smart. One of the stereotypes about smart people is that, like, we're not sexy. Yeah. And so I wanted to have the site that was like, we do all this this crazy smart stuff all the time and say all this crazy smart stuff, but like we're also sexy and have fun and party and stuff. That people think that's like the opposite of being smart, and it's not.
Yeah, everybody has that like stereotypical nerd in their mind that if you are intelligent and you can say, understand, or possibly even spell words that aren't monosyllabic, that you are no fun. And I work my hardest to prove those people wrong. It's like my goal in life, you know? If I can do anything other than show that people can be sexy and they can like sex and they can like to party and like to have a good time and still possess a cerebral cortex, then I will be satisfied on the day that I die.
Yeah. And not only those two things, not only are they not mutually exclusive, but they inform each other. I mean, most of the really hot people I've known have been smart. There's this stereotype that, like, hot people are dumb and smart people are ugly, and that's not really that true. It's just, you know, I guess that instinct that people want to believe, you know, oh, everything's, like, balanced out, and, like, someone who's lucky in one area is going to be unlucky in another area. But, like, most people who are hot, like, in an interesting way, not just in, like, a bland, paranoid sorority girl way, but like sexy in an interesting way, most of those people are smart, and they're using their intelligence to get that way. People who might be good looking at first and then turn out not to be smart are usually not that hot.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, their lack of intelligence definitely decreases the hotness factor for somebody who is relatively intelligent. If you can't have a conversation with this person, like, okay, I can, like, take you home and fuck you, but that's the end of it. I mean, and that's not, you know, really productive.
Could we have, like, maybe 1 minute of true sexual education for the 16-year-olds that are listening right now and are being told that abstinence only is the way to get through?
Who is saying that?
Well, nobody's really saying it as much as we know that, you know, over the last 7 years or 6 years that the CDC and George Bush have pushed as hard as they can to teach people that the only way to avoid sexually transmitted diseases is through abstinence alone. However, the problem...
Well, I mean, I guess technically that's true, but it's also true that the only way to avoid dying in a car accident is never to get in a car, and the only way to avoid choking to death is never to eat food. But who wants to live like that?
Right. Very, very good point. And, you know, my point would have been just that these abstinence-only education programs tend to never coincide with real education, which is that a better way to prevent a sexually transmitted disease is to wear a condom and exhibit your natural biological function anyway, instead of trying to bottle it up and repress yourself like your religion wants you to do, and just try to be safe with who you have sex with and how you have sex, as opposed to being told to never have it. Because what happens is, like in our country, we have a higher teen pregnancy rate and a higher STD rate than other nations that teach their children properly about sex. And so I just think it's important to balance out that really poor education for a moment and let people know that the proper way to have sex is to protect yourself and not to try to abstain, because that's not going to work. Your body wants to have sex.
It's also been proven all it does is makes them less likely to use condoms.
That's my point.
I can't be planning to have sex. I have to convince myself that like it was spontaneous and I couldn't control myself or whatever. Yeah. So really, those people actually end up having sex at pretty much the same rate as everybody else. The only difference is, like, they end up just not using condoms when they do. That's all abstinence-only education does.
This sort of reminds me of, like, the same thing with alcohol in our country as well, you know? Like, if in Europe, people are taught how to drink responsibly at a young age, and it's available to them, you know, as soon as they can see over a countertop. Where here, you can't have it. It's against the law to drink before you are 21. And that leads kids to rebel and do other things and to drink improperly, and they get into car accidents and die. I mean, like, if they were taught at a younger age how to do things responsibly, and I think this goes, like, all around the table, and this is just evidence how Christianity fucks up countries. You know, if it was a secular country, we wouldn't have to worry about any of these problems with sex, with drugs, with alcohol. Like, weed's another thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, come on now. I mean, if you learn how to do it responsibly, anything, if you're taught how to do it responsibly, I think the problem lies in the parents. Like, you know, Christians tend to be selfish, and that in turn leads to selfish parenting, and they don't want the responsibility of teaching their kids things. So they just wait until they're old, and then they just say, here, you can just do whatever you want now. Like,
well, just because we are logical people, we have to make sure we're not engaging in a post-hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy here ourselves. I mean, religiosity also correlates with being poor. And so in some situations, it's just actually being poor that's causing some of the stuff you're talking about. But in general, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that the bigger issue really is the whole kind of neurosis that people develop in this country and about things like sex or drinking or whatever it is. And I don't even know that in other countries it's something that anybody's explicitly teaching. It's just something that's a part of normal life.
Right.
That you kind of absorb throughout the course of your childhood. And so when you grow up, it's like, oh yeah, this is just, you know, it's just normal. I'm normal. Yeah. I want to have sex. I'm normal.
Yeah.
And as opposed to, you know, in a country like this where there's so much taboo associated with the discussion that, you know, it's like, oh God, I'm dirty. And then, but when you can't resist your own body, then you're even worse. And it's just horrible. I mean, it's like I like to say to people, you've got four biological urges. You need to eat, you need to sleep, you need to breathe, and you need to fuck. And all of them are equally important.
By the way, in the chat room right now, Joe Zemecki has a helpful piece of advice. Don't carry a condom around in your wallet for several years and then use it. Additionally, while we have a large audience here, we should remind everybody to check out Joe Zemecki's rally that he's going to be hosting down in Texas soon. You can get more information at atheist.org/TX. He's going to have a big separation of church and state rally there. And everybody's invited, Christian, Muslim, atheist, because separation of church and state is important to all of us. In 150 years, when the Muslims outweigh the Christians in this country, I don't think the Christians are going to like it too much when our dollar bill says one nation under Allah and our money says in Allah we trust. So if you don't want that sort of thing to happen, you should protect our rights just as we would protect your rights. And so definitely check out atheist.org/TX. Now, Willpower had a question for you, Sexo. Why the number 1585? What's the significance?
What it actually means is 15% conservative, 85% liberal. That's why in the logo the 15 is red and the 85 is blue.
Interesting.
I noticed that really it's not even about what we actually are so much as stereotypes, like what people would assume I am, because I noticed when I first met people, just based on my personality,
right,
they would always assume I was a conservative. I guess just because, like, I call people stupid, I like to argue, you know, like I'm loud, I'm sure of myself and stuff. And it's like, you know, I tell them, no, I'm actually quite liberal, and they were surprised. I mean, plus also because we disagree with, you know, the PC stuff and whatever. So, like, we do. I mean, I do feel bad that sometimes it's only, like, you know, conservative authors who will call bullshit on some of that stuff, because really it should just be, like, non-party-oriented, logical people who are doing that. But in order to express it in a way that it made sense to people, really it has a lot to do with, like, the left rejecting stuff that it shouldn't have been rejecting, you know, thinking that it was conservative. I mean, I've been in conversations with, like, you know, campus liberals and stuff who've accused me of being conservative for the weirdest. I once had somebody, like, tell me that, like, the fact that I lift weights means I'm conservative. And I was like, what? Like,
because
I like to be, like, in shape and have my, like,
better.
My body look nice. And they were like, oh, it's, like, macho and about gender difference and whatever. That's
yeah.
conservative. I'm like, no, it's not. It's just, like, not being paranoid, sour grapes loser. Like, just, like, not being a loser doesn't mean you're conservative. It means you're, you know, a liberal who's not a loser.
Well, I wanted to congratulate Will for the best question of the hour. We will be sending a beautiful, attractive woman to your door soon with protection. So that you can have a night of fun on the Rational Response Squad and Sex Orgrammatica. So Will Power runs the Rational Response Squad Alabama unit. Congratulations. You have a fun night ahead of you. Good question.
One free sex. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we're moving through these really slowly. Your next one is that you're pro-argument. And that,
yeah. Yeah, but we want to argue with you about that.
We want to argue with you about being pro-argument. You shouldn't be pro-argument, because if you're pro-argument, then you're making fun of other people's beliefs.
Yeah.
And this isn't an argument, because
yeah.
I'm not arguing
yeah,
with you that
we
about the fact
you
that you're pro-argument.
It also means that I think everyone who disagrees with me should be in jail.
Yeah.
Right, that's another one we get. Like, whenever you point out that someone's wrong about something, it's like, oh, you it's a free country, you think I should be in jail, you're a Nazi. It's like, no, dude, I was just telling you you're wrong.
Yeah,
that's different.
We get that
I'm
all
not saying
the time.
It should be against the law. Big
yeah.
difference.
Yeah, we get that constantly. Like, if you know, by pointing out the fact that religious people are not being rational, that all of a sudden we hate them, we hate their God, and we want to kill all of them. You know, we're militant because we're telling them that they're wrong. I mean, okay, yeah, I'm so militant. I'm, like, using my brain and my voice and logic and things to show you how you're wrong, and that makes me militant. Okay.
Yeah. And people really don't get that. You have to explain it. No, like, how I think it's a good idea for people to exercise, and, like, would encourage people to do that. And I would tell people who don't exercise that it's a bad idea to not exercise. Do I think that people who don't exercise should go to jail? No.
They should all die.
Yeah, that's what conservatives don't get, because in their heads, they really do think everything they disagree with should be against the law.
Yeah.
So the idea of, like, being against something, thinking it's wrong, thinking it's a bad idea, but at the same time not wanting to bring the law into it, that's like a totally foreign concept to them.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of ties into another one of your codes here, which is the fifth one that says 1585s believe that it is always better to believe something true than something false in all possible cases about all possible subjects, even when it would make people feel better to believe the false thing. And this is like a huge religious thing there, because why do you want to take away people's hope? It makes them feel good to believe in God. Why do you want to destroy all of their hopes and dreams?
Yeah, it makes them feel good about themselves to beat up homosexuals in the streets. Why do you want to take that away from them?
I mean, this is the argument that you get from the cafeteria Christian who's like, religion's all about love and peace and happiness. It just cracks me up when they use that analogy, because it's like, I would rather know the truth of an issue and deal with the fact that, you know, maybe it's not comforting, but it's true. I'm not being delusional. I'm not being irrational. This is the fact. If you had cancer, you might feel better if you didn't know you had cancer. But if you didn't know that you had cancer, you wouldn't be able to treat it, and then you would just die. So should we not tell people who have cancer that they have cancer, because then they're going to be upset that they have cancer?
Yeah. And even if someone can come up with an isolated example of, well, what about such and such a thing? Even though it's false, it makes people feel better to believe it, so what's the big deal? Even if you can list some examples where it really isn't a big deal, you're still setting a precedent that it's okay to, in general, decide what you do or don't believe based on how it makes you feel. And that's a horrible precedent to set. I mean, you know, it would make people feel better to believe that, like, the Holocaust didn't happen. But it did. You can't just arbitrarily be like, it would make me feel better to believe this, it would make me feel better to believe that. Because that's a road that humanity can't go down.
Yeah, it would make me feel better to think that there were no completely insane people who might break into my house tonight and murder me in my sleep. Or it would make me feel better that when I'm driving to work, there's no way that I could ever possibly die in a car accident. Or it would make me feel better to believe that I was a multimillionaire. But none of these things are true, and so I don't believe them.
Yeah.
Another really interesting one in here is number 9. 1585s believe that it is the responsibility of the gifted to educate, protect, and ultimately empower the pre-gifted. And that relates to one of your articles or essays that I think is really interesting. A treatise in support of the idea that constant, uncompromising correction of the dumb by the smart must continually take place.
This is excellent. I mean, this is the best stuff you've got right here.
Yeah. I love it. And, you know, I'm sure that you get a lot of people who are going to say, oh, my God, you are so arrogant because you really can't be smarter than anybody else. And, like, how can you say that people aren't smart as you? And
I was in a huge argument on MySpace with somebody named Enlightenment Cat about that article for a while. Like, it kind of ended with us. We just kept going around in circles of, like, she or he, I have no idea because it's a cat, was taking that position of, like, everyone should always doubt themselves and you should never assert that anything is true. You should doubt yourself. And it's like, well, I understand that. I understand that philosophical tradition. But the problem is, you know, the problem with good advice like that is that only good people listen to the good advice and then bad people don't. So if you make this prescription of, people should doubt themselves and not advance their beliefs too hard on anybody else, then what's going to happen? Good people are going to listen to that advice. Assholes won't. So the result is assholes are running around forcing their beliefs on people and not being challenged. Irresponsible people end up with 25 kids and responsible people have 2 kids. And ironically, it's the people who are good enough people to have, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 kids that should be the ones who are having 30, and the ones who are having 30 who should be having none.
Have you seen the movie Idiocracy?
I have. I saw it with my best friend when it was in the theaters, and we were the only 2 people in the theater.
No way.
Wow. It was out in, like, that movie got buried because, like, the corporations that got made fun of in it were mad or something. It played for, like, 1 weekend in 6 cities or something. If anyone's listening that hasn't seen it, it's an awesome movie. You should rent it. No, in fact, buy it tomorrow. Idiocracy.
Yeah, I did think that it was a little over the top for my taste, but the point, I think, is very valid. And if you look at, like, a map of the United States, and you can kind of compare it with the religiosity level in certain areas, or the intelligence, or the educational status in different areas of the country, and then compare that with the reproductive rates in those same areas of the country, it certainly does seem like in 500 years we're going to be overrun by a bunch of fundy Christian retards. And that's scary.
Well, luckily, it also correlates with obesity, so maybe they'll just kind of, like, all have heart attacks or something.
Maybe they'll have heart attacks while trying to reproduce and ultimately not be successful. That would be, like, the best possible scenario.
Yeah. Well, luckily, what we're all doing right now is, you know, a form of reproducing as well. You know, if they have 1 million kids and then we change the minds of, you know, 90% of those 1 million kids, that's an even more powerful form of reproducing.
Yeah, well, we're going with the horizontal method of reproduction of memes and ideas, rather than just the straight up vertical reproduction of having sex and creating progeny.
No, it's scary. You're right.
Yeah. But so, yeah, because we definitely agree that if you're wrong on something or, you know, you're not being logical about it, that you should be told that. And that really, in our minds, we feel like you should be thanking us. Like, if I was wrong about something and somebody showed me some kind of problem in my thinking or in the database that I'm using or whatever and demonstrated how I was wrong, I would be glad that they corrected me because I want to be right.
Richard Dawkins tells a story in The Root of All Evil, in the beginning of The Root of All Evil, about 25 minutes in. He tells a story about, and I can't recall it perfectly, but you know, he was in a class as a student, and a semi-famous mathematician came to the class to teach them about a theory that he had been working on for about 20 years. And he showed the class his theory and example, and one of the students raised his hand and told the professor that he could show him how his theory was wrong. And this is somebody who had dedicated 20 years of their life to this theory and to the setting forward of this theory. The student went to the chalkboard and within a few minutes showed the professor how there is no way that his theory could be accurate and that it was completely invalid. The professor turned to the student, shook his hand, and said, "Thank you so much. This is a great day for science, for it has just advanced, and I was wrong." And that is the sort of philosophy that we embrace here and that we think that the world should embrace and should be willing to accept the possibility that they're wrong. In fact, in order for one to be able to ever say that they're open-minded, they have to be willing to accept the possibility that they're wrong about something. And a lot of times when you have these arguments with religious people, you'll hear them say, "Oh, well, I can't be wrong. There's no way I'm wrong." And so that is indicative of somebody with a closed mind who you probably are not going to have much chance at getting through to.
Yeah, I remember seeing that part of the documentary where Dawkins told that story, and it made me cry, actually. I thought it was like it's just the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. That's another stereotype about us. Religious people think we can't appreciate beauty or something if we don't believe in God. And it's like, no, I do. Like, that story was beauty to me. Here's how nuts it is with some of these religious people. It's not even that they don't want to be proven wrong about the existence of God. It's like even stuff within their internal closed system of what they believe. It's like if somebody points out that like something in the Bible is a mistranslation and we still have, you know, the original Hebrew and it actually says something else, they even get mad about that. And it's like, okay, according to you, you believe God said this. Even with that, you're mad that someone corrects you? That's pretty much proof right there that it has nothing to do with, oh, I believe this is what God said, and it's just their own shit in their own head.
Yeah, well, because they're, I mean, completely emotionally attached to that concept, and proving it wrong is like threatening a part of like themselves, like their self-concept that's essential to them, and they
but
have to protect it at all means.
Not even proving it wrong, but just telling them like that, oh, if the Bible were translated accurately, this thing that you believe the word is the word of God would actually say this. Totally not even arguing against religion with them, but just pointing out, like, a mistake. Like, that should be, you know, shouldn't they believe that that's actually what God wants them to think, the correct translation? But no, they don't give a shit.
Yeah, well, couldn't their all-powerful God just make sure that the translations were correct anyway?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, of course, only if the translation's into English, obviously.
Yeah. I really enjoyed your essay on Pump Up the Volume, and actually there was another person in our chat room earlier who had said that. That was one of my favorite movies growing up. The movie really, when you're that age, you know, because you talk about watching it again and how your impression of it is different. But when I watched it at that age, was it like revolutionized my entire worldview. It was like the coolest thing ever.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, me too.
And like I realized, I mean, I haven't actually gone back and rewatched it, although I was thinking that I might after I read your essay.
Yeah, I was really nervous about that essay. I was like, oh man, this is like really nerdy.
Really nerdy.
It's like, you know, going off about how, like, I based my whole life on Pump Up the Volume.
But, yeah, and you also mentioned Stand By Me, which is, yeah, I mean, I think the thing, like, really, you know, that ties, like, the generations together is growing up at a time when these things were so influential, and then finding other people who had the same experience, essentially. And it's just always cool to, you know, run across that, because, like, those are probably two of the movies that I watched more than anything else for, you know, a vast majority of my early teen years.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Awesome.
So, yeah, I thought it was a good essay, and I can appreciate it as a former Pump Up the Volume fan myself. So, alrighty. So
we've got to wrap up the show. But if you have anything else that you want to throw in there before we do that.
Yeah, is there anything you want to add?
Oh, well, just thank you guys so much for having me on. I had a great time. I was nervous about screwing up, but as far as I know so far, I didn't screw up. And thanks so much for giving me a forum on your main site also to post some of the stuff and to link back to 1585. And I think this is a great partnership we've got going. I also totally love what you guys do.
Thanks.
Just a big, just a big love fest.
It's all about the love.
Yeah, no, we're glad to have met you, and, you know, we're really big fans of what you're doing. There's a lot of people out there that do stuff similar to us and do it differently, and I think it's really important that a lot of us, you know, work together to help each other spread different messages, because you don't know what is going to really make an impact on people. Everybody kind of thinks differently, and they react to different sort of language and different sort of writing, and I think that, you know, it's ironic. The people who were a little bit more provocative, like you and I, or, you know, our group and your group, I think we tend to understand that more than the sort of appeaser pansy group. You know, they tend to not like us, whereas I think that the pansies are just as important as the real men like us.